Hey there,
I'm Rachel.
And I'm Jessica, and this is All Things Sensory by Harkla. Together, we're on a mission to help children, families, therapists, and educators live happy, healthy lives.
We dive into all things sensory, special needs, occupational therapy, parenting, self-care, and so much more. In each episode, we share raw, honest, fun ideas and strategies for everyone to implement into daily life.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey friends, welcome back to another episode of All Things Sensory by Harkla. You're listening to your good friends, Rachel and Jessica, and this is episode 185.
Today, we are going to talk about something that we are calling the power of the pause. And I think we've talked about it in a couple of other episodes, but we want
briefly.
But we want to talk about what power of the pause means and why we love it so much.
Okay. So what does this even mean? What is a pause? Well, it's a temporary stop. Mm-hmm. Why are we talking about this when it comes to treating kids? Why are we talking about this when it comes to either working with kids or having your own kiddo, whether you're a parent or in the classroom, if you're a teacher? Why is this important?
Yeah. First of all, when working with children who have sensory processing challenges or developmental disabilities, a pause can have a huge effect on a lot of things in their day. First and foremost, it can allow the child to process what is happening around them and what is being said.
This is a topic that kind of makes my blood boil a little bit.
Yeah.
When I either see in the environment someone who's not pausing and letting their child process, and I want to say something, like, but I can't, you know? Hopefully, this episode just puts it all out there. But the pause, it allows them to think and process and interpret and formulate their own appropriate response to the question or the comment or the thought that someone that you are sharing with them.
Now, while we are specifically talking about children with sensory processing challenges, I do have a personal example here because Logan, who is 8 years old, who's, you know, neurotypical, he actually benefits so much from this, from me pausing when we're talking to each other. Like, he has a million things running through his brain. And so if I get his attention or I say something or ask him a question, it literally takes him a good 5 seconds to like stop what's going on in his brain and process what I said, and then he can formulate a response. And so he actually needs that pause, that little bit of an extra pause to help himself process. And I think it's just, he has so much going on in his brain. Mm-hmm. But I think this can be helpful for so many individuals, whether they have sensory processing challenges or not.
Well, let me throw my 2 cents in there with my personal example. I have a 14-month-old and I do the same thing to Trip. And if I ask him a question, and now that he's walking, you know, he likes to help out and do little like chores and stuff. And so if I ask him to get his shoes or to throw his diaper in the trash, it definitely takes him a minute to look around, find what he needs, do what I'm asking, and 50% of the time it's correct, 50% of the time it's not, which is fine. But it works the same way for toddlers as well.
Yeah, I think it's especially important for toddlers because they're still learning the language skills, mm-hmm. and they're still learning the motor planning skills, and those aren't fully developed. So they especially need that pause.
Yes. Now, you know, we talk about kids with auditory processing disorder or just auditory processing challenges. This is helpful for kids who do have slow processing speed in general, and then kids who struggle with anxiety as well.
And giving them this pause and this moment to think and gather their own thoughts can help build their confidence because it allows the child to respond on their own time. They don't feel rushed. You know, they don't feel like someone is waiting for them constantly. It just gives them a little extra time and can help them feel more secure in themselves.
Yeah. So a little empathy component again, because we always like to talk about empathy. But have you ever asked a child a question and they took a few extra seconds to process what they asked so their caregiver answered for them? Nod your head. We know that that has happened before. It's common.
We've also done it ourselves as parents.
100%.
We're all guilty of it.
Yes. We're not like these two great therapists on this high pedestal. Heck no.
I mean, we are great therapists, but we definitely experience all of this and we've been there and done that. So,
yep.
Okay. But yeah, put yourself in this child's shoes. You're asked a question, and before you have a chance to formulate a response, somebody else answers for you. What message is being sent to the child when this happens?
And if it happens over and over and over again, is the child going to learn they aren't good enough, they aren't smart enough, they aren't fast enough? And then, you know, pretty soon they'll probably stop listening and responding and answering questions altogether, or they'll just get frustrated, or maybe they'll internalize those feelings and they won't necessarily process exactly what they're feeling.
Yeah.
None of these are good options.
No, I think, yeah, it's our job as therapists, as parents, as professionals to encourage these children to formulate their own thoughts, their own ideas, their own opinions. And sometimes it just requires us giving them an extra 30 to 60 seconds to formulate their own thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It can be uncomfortable and awkward sometimes, but that is the power of the pause. It is worth it. Mm-hmm. And while Jess and I, we love sharing our opinions, our thoughts, and
we love telling you how we think.
You know, we have a lot of experience and we've learned a lot in our years, but we also want to make sure that we're backing up what we're saying with other information as well. And we actually found an article from Early Intervention Strategies for Success. We'll link the article in the show notes, but we found this fantastic article that kind of goes into more of the why and more details from like a speech side of it as well. So we want to kind of highlight some important topics from this article that we found as well.
Yeah. So using a pause requires two things from us. It requires patience. So we have to be patient while we wait. And it also requires respect for the child and respect for the child's effort, whatever that effort looks like.
Mm-hmm. Pausing doesn't always work the first time you try it. Mm-hmm. So if you give the child a few extra seconds to answer the question that you gave them and they don't necessarily respond, it doesn't mean that it's not working. It usually requires that you teach the child what you expect them to do by repeating the routine, using prompting, you know, visual prompting, verbal prompting, and then kind of fading that support out as they kind of get the hang of it.
Yeah. And I like this idea of using the same 1 to 3 word prompts so that you're consistent and it helps the child associate what you're saying to what they're learning to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now in this article, they mentioned that it can take up to 45 seconds for some children to process what you say and respond. So be patient. Be very patient when you're asking them either to do something or questions or to share their thoughts.
And some children will have shorter wait times and you have to figure out how long to wait before the child loses interest, before they become frustrated, kind of trial and error to figure out how long you need to wait before you provide help or provide another cue.
Yeah, as therapists, I think this comes a little bit more naturally to us because we are observant and, you know, the whole OT profession, it's kind of in our nature to do this, but you know, if you're working with a family and you want to teach them this, have the family come back so they can watch what you do and your cues and your verbiage and explain to them what you're doing and why it's important, because it doesn't come naturally all the time for parents, teachers, you know, people who don't necessarily have the same background as we do.
I think
that's okay.
For sure. We all are just learning as we go. And so when we learn something new, that's okay. We're like, oh, I didn't know that before. Now I'm going to try it. But I think we are so rushed in our everyday lives to just go. I know that's a whole other topic, but this is a great way to force ourselves to slow down, take our time. Sometimes we are going to be in more of a rush, but as much as possible, just slowing down and pausing and letting our children think and process for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So the next one that we wanted to touch on, so waiting until the child is totally upset and losing their mind, it's never an effective method, but pausing long enough so they are motivated to act, that can work well. So it's a balance, like we mentioned earlier, that you have to figure out through trial and error.
Mm-hmm.
Not just trial and error.
Yes. Yes.
Hey everyone, we got to take a quick minute and share some exciting news with you.
We are doing a brand new challenge that starts in January.
We're calling it the 30-Day Primitive Reflex Challenge.
We're going to focus on 4 of the common primitive reflexes. Each week will be a different primitive reflex, and we're going to show you different activities to complete.
The challenge will be hosted on a private Instagram account, and it's only $5 to join.
We're going to have demo videos. You're going to get freebies. It's going to be on Instagram. So we're also going to have stories and live videos. It's going to be amazing.
Yes. You'll also get a special discount for our full Primitive Reflex course after you've completed the 30-day challenge with us.
So since you're ready to sign up and join us for this challenge in January, you can go to the link in the show notes or go to our Instagram at All Things Sensory Podcast and join via the link in bio.
Okay, let's get back to the episode.
If you are a therapist or other professional, teaching parents about this is great. Like we said, we forget to pause and wait because we're always so busy, but learning to pause helps provide and create that expectation that the child is going to do something with that cue, whether it's looking somewhere, responding verbally, moving to do something, or even, you know, if the child realizes that they didn't fully hear and process what you said, looking back and saying, hey, can you repeat what you said? That's another personal example with Logan is he's so busy in his own brain. If I say something to him, I'll give him that pause. And sometimes he'll look back and be like, oh, I didn't hear you. Can you, you know, tell me again? And just teaching him to use his words versus just pretending like he knows what's going on or continuing to ignore or go on with his day, but responding in some way.
Yeah. Okay. So this last one is kind of the grand finale of this article that we loved. So the expectation is critical to the development of these things: independence, self-confidence, and communication. A simple pause can make a world of difference, whether your child is neurotypical, whether they have a speech delay, whether they have autism, whether they have sensory processing disorder, whoever they are, whatever they are dealing with, even if it's nothing or we think it's nothing, it can make a huge difference.
Yes. Okay, one more resource. This one is an article called The Power of a 4-Second Pause, Why ADHD Brains Need a Beat. That's such a catchy title.
I know. Maybe we'll work on those fun titles for our podcast.
I know. I love that. Okay. We will link this article in the show notes as well. But this one kind of starts in preschool, right? So as a preschooler's brain develops, they need more processing time than adults do. When they're asked a question, they need time to think about what the question means, how to process an answer, like thinking about how they're going to answer it, form the words to communicate their answer, and verbalize it. Like, those are 4 steps that, like, we don't even think about that mm-hmm. our children have to go through when we ask them a question. And when we fill that silence, that pause, and follow it up with another question instead of waiting, we force these kids to start that process all over again.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, a professional from this article calls it the wait time, quote unquote, wait time in the classroom. And she found that when teachers purposefully employed that wait time, that students gave better responses, their self-confidence increased because they were able to spend time recalling the information and coming up with a good answer. So consciously allowing for that wait time or pausing after you give instructions or ask a question, it sets those kids up for, sets every child up for positive interactions as a professional with the child, as a parent with the child, and for peers as well.
Yeah. So the act of pausing, repeating back what we hear in a positive way, and letting go of any agenda is known as reflecting. And by actively choosing to do this, we encourage our kids to not just recall information, but to be aware of what they learned. Right.
I feel this is so hard for our kids nowadays.
Yes, it is.
Everything is so instant to be able to like independently recall that information that they just learned is tricky.
Yeah. So when we pause, we're showing our children that we're open to hearing what they have to say, right? We're not jumping in with our point of view. We're waiting so that they can tell us what's going on, what they learned.
Yep. So for parents, the pause, that power of pause, makes our job easier, believe it or not. So I'm talking as a parent now.
But it's so hard.
And I like that this article says when we take the time to have a 4-beat pause Mississippi style.
Okay, so hold on. So let's see how long that is really quick.
Okay.
One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, four Mississippi.
All I could think about is Ross in the tanning booth when he's trying to get his tan. He gets to the 12.
What does he say? But I counted Mississippi or something.
Mississippi-lessly. Wait, do you want me to count Mississippi-lessly?
That's so accurate.
I want you to count Mississippi-ly, not Mississippi-lessly.
God, we're just making up words now.
Okay, so going forward. So when we take the time to have that 4-beat Mississippi style, we don't need to have all the answers, don't have to be perfect, don't jump to conclusions, and don't answer the question we think our kids are asking. Answer only the question that he or she is asking. Okay. Give the preschooler, the young child, time to gather their thoughts and verbalize them if they are capable of verbalizing them.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. I'm glad we had this talk.
Some key takeaways here. Just remembering that if we can pause when we ask our child something, it allows them to formulate their own thoughts and in the end, build confidence.
Mm-hmm. I highly recommend sending this podcast episode to people who are around your child. If your kiddo goes to daycare, if they go to school, send it to their teacher, their daycare, if they're around their grandparents, send this episode and say, look, these are some things that we're trying to incorporate into our day. And I want to make sure everyone is on the same page. So take a listen to this fantastic podcast episode and, you know, help us to implement these strategies. So that way Johnny can do his best.
Yes, absolutely. If you liked this episode, let us know, take a screenshot and post it to social media and tag us at All Things Sensory Podcast. Leave us a review on iTunes if you're feeling so inclined to do so. It takes 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. And I'm really curious to know what y'all thought about this episode.
Yeah. Hopefully it resonated with you because, like I said earlier, this is a topic near and dear to my heart. And I just think I'm very passionate about teaching this. Why did it take us 185 episodes to get to this topic?
I don't know. But it's here now. So it's here. Okay, let's go ahead and answer a couple of questions from you, our lovely listeners. This first question is, my son will be going to kindergarten next year, and I'm finding out there isn't much help for kids like him in schools. Do you have any tips on helping them stay regulated in school? 8 hours a day in school without heavy work sounds daunting. So first of all, I will say from experience, my son went to an all-day kindergarten as well. They actually get quite a bit of movement, typically, depending on the school you're at. They should have a couple of recesses. They're going to have probably a recess during lunchtime. ideally, the kindergarten teacher understands that his or her kindergartners need to move to learn, so they will allow more free movement. I'm curious if your son needs or would benefit from occupational therapy the summer before kindergarten starts, because that could be helpful. Those are my first thoughts.
Yeah, I'm thinking, you know, maybe send this podcast or send our podcast to the kindergarten teacher. I don't know if it's possible, but maybe that could be helpful. So that way they do understand a little bit more about sensory needs in school. But I would say incorporate the activities that you're doing, the heavy work activities, the vestibular, tactile, whatever is beneficial for his nervous system, do it in the morning, and then teach him what he can do either at his desk or send some supplies to school and ask the teacher if she can implement them, and make sure they're like super simple, like Velcro under the desk, a bouncy band on the chair, maybe a wiggle seat on his chair. He can do chair push-ups. So focus on teaching him how to stay regulated on his own if he's capable. Use visuals like the BrainWorks visuals from Sensational Brain. Use those visuals on like a key ring so he can put them in his pocket and like look at them for ideas. Like, and then you can write on them like a smiley face for if he's feeling happy, or like a stressed out face if he's feeling stressed out or nervous. And then he can flip it over and look at the card and say, oh, okay, I can do this trick if I need to feel better. So it kind of depends on his cognitive level, but if he's going to an 8-hour day in school, then that could be a possibility. But just communicate with his kindergarten teacher as much as possible.
I was just going to say, yeah, you got to make sure that you approach it from a team approach as well, not from a, hey, you need to do this for my child. It needs to be, hey, this is where my child struggles. What can you do in the classroom to help him throughout the day so he can be successful? Because that's what we want. We want him to like going to school. We want him to be successful. And ultimately, the teachers want the same things. They don't want to have a student who hates coming to their class. So approach it from that team aspect. But if he's really struggling with sensory processing, see if you can get a referral for occupational therapy, because those OT services before he starts kindergarten can be really, really helpful.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right. I like those. Next question is anxiety around temperature regulation. So worried about being hot all the time. I'm not sure if you're talking about you as the parent or therapist.
Yeah, it's for the kid.
Is the adult worried about the child being hot all the time, or is the child worried about being hot all the time?
The way that I read it was that the child has anxiety around temperature regulation, has anxiety around feeling hot all the time.
Oh, okay.
That's how I read it. Yeah. I could be wrong.
I mean, especially if you're in a warm place, I can relate.
I know. I'd be curious about the background of like, was there a negative experience with being too warm at one point and the child became so overheated that they got sick, or they don't like, maybe they don't like being sweaty. You know, maybe they hate the feeling of sweat.
Maybe they get a little claustrophobic if they have too many clothes on and they do get sweaty, or they can't move and they get hot.
Is there like a medical condition that can cause someone to feel overly hot? Like a medical condition that causes the body to not regulate temperature correctly?
I mean, that's not really my area of expertise, but
mine either.
I don't know, maybe.
Maybe there's some underlying medical condition.
Maybe they need a little personal fan or those like cute little ice packs, you know, they can pack those around.
Maybe fill up a water bottle and keep it filled with ice and water throughout the day.
Yeah, that's a good idea. In one of those like stainless steel water bottles so it keeps the ice cold.
Yeah. I wonder the cognitive level of the child, if you can talk about the fear and maybe do some social story type work around why they feel this way, when do they feel the most anxious about it, and then come up with strategies based on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think having that conversation and going along with the power of pause topic
and empathy.
Yeah, let them try to verbalize their feelings and their thoughts and see if they can come up with a plan to help reduce settings. Maybe it's a primitive reflex or an interoceptive challenge. Maybe there needs to be more vestibular work done because those two systems are directly connected.
Yeah. Hopefully that brainstorming helps a little bit and get your juices flowing. The brain juices.
Yes. And on that note, we are going to let y'all go and we will chat with you next week. Thank you so much for listening to All Things Sensory by Harkla. If you want more information on anything we mentioned in the show, head over to harkla.co/podcast to get all of the show notes.
We always have the show notes and links, plus full transcripts to make following along as easy as possible for everyone. If you have follow-up questions, the best place to ask those is in the comments on the show notes or message us on our Instagram account, which is @Harkla_family. If you just search Harkla, you'll find us.
Like we mentioned before, our podcast listeners get 10% off their first order at Harkla, whether it's for one of our digital courses, one of our sensory swings. The discount code SENSORY will save you 10%. That code is SENSORY. Head over to harkla.co/sensory to use that code right now so you don't forget.
We're so excited to work together to help create confident kids all over the world and work towards a happier, healthier life.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Just a friendly reminder, this is general information related to occupational therapy, pediatrics, and sensory integration. We do not know you or your child, therefore we do not know any specific needs. Therefore, you should always refer back to your pediatrician and occupational therapist for more information.